You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m., our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews, and culture pieces from across Aotearoa Dunedin.
Good afternoon. You're listening to R1 News at 1. We are your hosts today. I'm Celia.
I'm Adam.
I'm Tristan.
We will be back shortly with the bulletin, and today we've also got an interview with Annie Robertson from Antarctica New Zealand talking about the Adelie Penguin in this year's Bird of the Year. And we also have local produce with Jordan Irvine on the Underbirds, a documentary on the Pukenui bird. We'll be back shortly.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Wednesday, 11th of September. I'm Tristan.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Celia. In national news, a legal challenge against Kaipara District Council's decision to abolish its Māori ward is set to begin Wednesday morning. Ngāti Whātua Iwi is asking the High Court to reverse the Council's move, claiming it violated the Local Government Act by not including Māori in the decision-making process. A peaceful rally took place outside the Auckland High Court at 9:30 a.m. this morning. Kaipara District Council became the first in New Zealand to use a new law to remove its Māori ward during a heated meeting on August the 7th. The council says it will defend its decision. Both sides will present the arguments today, with the court decision expected later this week. Ngāti Whātua argues that it, along with other iwi and hapū, should have been consulted before the removal of Te Moana Nui or Kaipara Māori ward. The Local Government Amendment Act 2024, effective July 30th, requires councils that establish Māori wards without a referendum to either abolish them by 2025 or hold a binding poll on their future. As of the deadline, only Kaipara District and Upper Hutt City opted to disestablish their Māori wards.
Contact Energy has bought out renewable energy generator Manawa Energy. Giles Beckford of RNZ reports. Contact Energy, a full power generator and retailer, has proposed a near $2 billion merger with the energy generator Manawa Energy. Contact has agreed to pay a combination of cash and its own shares to the equivalent of $5.95 for each Manawa share, valuing the deal at just under $1.9 billion. Contact Energy has also agreed to pay off Manawa's debt, which was last reported as $81 million in bank loans and $372 million in bonds as of March 2024. Contact's Chief Executive, Mike Fugue, said that the merger would make Contact more resilient and diversify its generation portfolio that would help manage risk in a dry year that slows hydroelectric power generation. This sale comes amidst what Prime Minister Christopher Luxon has labelled as an energy crisis that has brought up questions around New Zealand's energy supply levels and the rising price of electricity.
New Zealand is seeing a rise in mpox cases, especially following a winter pride event in Queenstown, RNZ reports. Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, has been causing concern among the queer community. The current strain, clade 2, is less severe than the one spreading in Africa, but still poses risks. Symptoms include flu-like signs and painful lesions. If you attended winter pride or have symptoms, it's crucial to get tested. Vaccines are recommended and available to book at Student Health.
In international news, at least 127 people have died and 54 others are missing in northern Vietnam after a super typhoon which struck the nation on Saturday continues to bring heavy rainfall, landslides and flooding. Kelly Nye and Christy Cooney of BBC reports. Typhoon Yagi, the most powerful storm the nation has seen in 30 years, has brought havoc across the country, leaving 1.5 million people without power and stranding thousands of people on rooftops across Vietnam's northern provinces. The storm, which brought winds of over 203 kilometers per hour, caused a bridge to collapse on Tuesday, plunging several vehicles into the water below. Vietnamese authorities have since issued flood and landslide warnings across 401 communes and 18 of the nation's northern provinces. Scientists warn that as the world continues to warm, typhoons will bring increasingly intense rainfall and wind speeds.
James Earl Jones, the actor who gave voice to Star Wars' principal villain Darth Vader, has died aged. James Earl Jones, the actor who gave voice to Star Wars' principal villain Darth Vader, has died aged 93. Jones died in his home in Dutchess County, New York, according to an announcement from his representative, and no cause of death was provided. Among those to pay tribute to James was Star Wars creator George Lucas, who called him an incredible actor, a most unique voice both in art and spirit. Jones was not the original choice for the role of Vader. British bodybuilder David Prowse was cast in the first film, released in 1977, for his imposing physique, but the film's director George Lucas was unhappy with Prowse's pronounced West Country accent. Jones was given the job of revoicing Vader's menacing dialogue, creating an intense, instantly immoral evildoer in the process. Jones also had great success with another voice acting role, Mufasa from the 1994 Disney animation The Lion King. Jones reprised his role in the 2019 remake directed by Jon Favreau. Jones was affected by a stammer as a child, which he overcame with the help of a teacher. After studying drama at the University of Michigan and a spell in the military after the Korean War, Jones earned arguably his defining role on the stage, boxer Jack Jefferson, modeled on real-life great Jack Johnson, in Howard Sackler's play The Great White Hope. Star Wars and its sequels have solidified Jones' presence in mainstream cinema, and he benefited from a regular stream of supporting roles in big films, becoming one of the most high-profile black American actors of the 1980s and 90s. In student news, a reminder that the nominations are currently open for the upcoming OUSA Exec for 2025. If you're keen to be on next year's student exec, then head to OUSA main office reception along with two mates to nominate you to get on the ballot. You have until this Thursday, 4:30 p.m. To find out more about the roles available, duties of the exec, the election process, and rules, head to ousa.org.nz.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Wednesday, 11th of September. Today's bulletin was written and read to you by Celia Ward, Adam Stightley, and Tristan Serrano.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
Stay tuned for R1 News. Upcoming, we have Conservation Conversations, where we interview Annie Robertson from Antarctica, New Zealand, about Bird of the Year and the Adelie Penguin. After that, we bring on Jordan Irvine for Local Produce on The Underbirds, a documentary on the Pukenui. Up next, we have Used to Be by The Worm.
Conservation Conversations, your weekly catch-up on close-to-home conservation news with Adam Stately on the R1 News at 1.
We now welcome Annie Robertson from Antarctica, New Zealand, onto the show for Conservation Conversations. Annie is a former student of Otago who completed her Master of Applied Science in Science Communications in 2022. Following this, she landed the Science Communicator role at Antarctica, New Zealand, the government agency that carries out New Zealand's activities in Antarctica in science and protecting its environment. She now joins us to talk about the Adelie Penguin, which is joining the running for this year's Bird of the Year competition. Kia ora, Annie.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Annie. So, with Bird of the Year in the middle of its voting period, Antarctica New Zealand has thrown its support around a campaign for the Adelie Penguin. What can you tell us about the Adelie Penguin and what is special about it?
Well, they're charismatic, feisty, curious little birds. They live in one of the coldest, driest, harshest environments in the world, and they're so perfectly evolved to live in this ecosystem. They're one of the most widespread bird species in Antarctica, and they breed on outcrops of rocks along the entire Antarctic coast and on small exposed islands. They build their nests out of little pebbles they find around them, and sometimes they steal their pebbles from their neighbours to adorn their own nests. And males often present little pebbles to females as a courtship ritual, obviously the best pebbles being highly prized. The Rossi Adelie also has the longest winter migration for their species and can travel over 12,000 kilometres. That's just as far as two trips between New Zealand and Fiji. And all in all, they're quite cute. They look like little toddlers running around, causing trouble. And they're just one of the cool birds. Personally, my favourite penguin. Way more interesting than the emperor or the yellow-eyed, I guess.
I believe they also look like they're running around in little tuxedos, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They're so cute. They're really funny just to watch. They're just always up to something and running around, like, causing trouble.
All right. So, with the Adelie penguin as one of the lesser-known birds on the ballot this year, given that they've only been spotted in New Zealand a handful of times, what is the significance of this bird garnering more attention and being included for Bird of the Year this year?
Even though they haven't made many appearances to New Zealand's mainland, they do live in New Zealand's home in Antarctica, the Ross Sea region, which is where Scott Base, our scientific base, resides. They don't just live there, they love it there. About 34% of their population lives in the Ross Sea region. And Antarctica New Zealand wanted to campaign for the Adelie penguin in the hopes that it will bring more awareness from the New Zealand public of how valuable they are to the Antarctic ecosystems and how they inform us on the general health of our world climate and the impact climate change has and the link between Antarctica and New Zealand. And to show that New Zealand helps to protect these birds by conducting an annual penguin census of the Ross Sea region.
With the penguins living in such remote areas, like the Ross Sea, how do you guys undertake this penguin census?
The penguin census is done by getting up in a helicopter and taking really high resolution images of the penguin colonies and of the nests. And it's about 2,000 to 2,500 feet above the 27 colonies. When we do this to avoid disturbing the birds, that's why we have it so high. And the acquired photographs are then processed in New Zealand with a semi-automated software which facilitates the counting of the nesting penguins. And the process of counting was once painstakingly done by marking every single nest on the images. So it's a lot easier now than it used to be.
Wow. And what are the biggest threats that are faced by the Adelie penguin currently?
Adelie penguins are like sentinel species. They're like the canaries in a coal mine. So if they're squeaking, then something's wrong. They tell us, they indicate the ecosystem health. Adelies are currently threatened by the ever-changing climate and their lifespans are intricately intertwined with sea ice conditions, which last year hit a record low. And then a decrease in sea ice results in their loss of habitat and can also reduce their access to feeding areas. The warming temperatures also affect the availability to krill, which is their main food source, as well as overfishing affecting it as well. Human pollution has also been found to be an issue for the Adelie penguins. A study that's still being done by the University of Waikato, which is led by Dr. Tanya O'Neill, showed that they looked at the contaminants of microplastics and DDT, which is like a chemical, and heavy metals that have been found around Antarctic ecosystems, and whether the contaminants are being absorbed by Adelie penguins. So when the penguins are eating the affected krill and fish, the contaminants can build up in their bodies and then are deposited through the feces and animal carcasses of feathers and eggshells. And the Adelie penguins return to the same breeding sites every year. So by looking at penguin nests, which are essentially poo mounds that have been built up over centuries, they become a natural archive of global contamination. And early findings from our past scholarship student, Madison Farron, who's an amazing, inspiring young scientist, they looked at whether the penguin colonies themselves are becoming a source of contamination with the runoff of melting snow and glaciers spreading from contaminants. And they found that they were, so the contaminants going into the ocean, which creates a never-ending cycle of ecosystems being contaminated. Like most species, Adelie penguins are fighting a battle against climate change, and they might not win.
Well, thank you for coming on, Annie. Really appreciate your time. And I wish the best of luck for the Adelie penguin and the Bird of the Year campaign. And hope you guys can have a good showing. Thank you.
Yeah, vote for the Adele.
And now we're back to Rockin' Back Inside My Heart by She's So Rad.
Joining us in the booth now is Jordan Irvine from Critic to Arohi with this week's local produce. Welcome, Jordan.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Who is this week's local produce?
Well, it's technically a documentary called Underbirds, which is about the Pukenui, otherwise known as the Southern New Zealand Dotterel. It's a bird that hangs out in Stewart Island. There's only 101 left. So you should vote for it for bird of the year. Straight into it. It's better than any penguin or any other bird. It is so cool. You should vote for it.
Okay, cool.
That's bird of the year.
Done. So who made the film? Who were the filmmakers?
It was a couple of just like Otago Science Communication students, Isabel and Brad. Mm-hmm. And someone else whose name I'm blanking on.
Abby,
who's a science communication student, and Brad does a bunch of like wildlife photography. So they went to Stewart Island and they teamed up with the rangers that work there. There's like 4 full-time staff rangers there.
Yeah.
And they just set up traps and make sure that the birds are all safe.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really hard for them, like, because it is kind of isolating there. The weather is a bit gnarly out there. They got, like, very cold and had to, like, adapt to it quite quickly. But, yeah, it's really cool.
There's some really cool cinematography of the actual island.
Yeah, right? The footage is insane. Really cool. There's this really one great aerial shot of one of the rangers just, like, walking on, like, the marshes, and it looks so beautiful. But, yeah, they talked about how, like, mentally draining it was, and you could tell that it must be rough out there.
Yeah. So the ones from Department of Conservation, are they living out there?
They pretty much just live out there full-time, basically. It's like 100 kilometres of land, and they have about, like, no, 50 kilometres of land and, like, 100 traps that they have to monitor daily to make sure that all the pests, so, like, all the feral cats that are there, there's even, like, deer, stoats and ferrets and all that stuff.
Yeah, I saw there was, like, they got, like, well, not secret footage, but footage of the deer eating.
Yeah, they eat the eggs, which is very unfortunate, and sometimes the cats, like, tear up the birds. One of the rangers got, like, really close with this bird, and then he's like, I named it after my girlfriend, and I was like, uh-oh. I was watching it, I'm like, this can't end well.
I know,
and then, and then the bird dies, and there's footage of him, and he's like, oh, can we try find the tag? And I'm like, oh, no. That's so sad.
Oh,
yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. How did you find out about the documentary?
Nina, editor, was like, yo, you should do this. And I was like, I'll check it out. And I'll watch the documentary. And, like, yeah, it was actually kind of moving.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Because I've been around birds my whole life. I've lived in, like, places that are, like, forests. And usually I'm just around, like, kereru and piwakawaka and all these birds that seem, like, so common. So it is kind of just, like, shocking when you hear about these birds that are, like, endangered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, we do actually need to, like, put in the mahi to make sure these things are safe, because, like, New Zealand is one of the only places that, like, has this diverse range of birds that are really cool like this, and we should protect them.
I don't know much about it, but the film really, like, addressed the issues really well. And did they say, the filmmakers, what did they enjoy about making it?
They just enjoyed the experience of, like, connecting with the birds and the rangers, and, like, it really is, like, a kind of thing we are experiencing it firsthand. Really, like, yeah, having to experience it firsthand, like, opens you up to how serious a lot of the issues are around these things.
Yeah,
I feel like when you're a bystander to a lot of it, it might not always, like, connect a lot of the time, because it seems so far away, but you're, when you're, like, face to face with it, it's,
you gotta do something. So the film was made for last year's Bird of the Year competition.
Yeah.
But voting for this year's competition is currently on.
Yeah, it closes on the 14th of September, so you have, like, 3 days.
Okay, so you can support the Pukenui or other endangered species if you want.
No, you don't have to. You can vote for five birds, but truly you only need to vote for one, which is the Southern New Zealand Otter, the Pukenui. Don't vote for the penguins. They're terrible animals, and they don't do anything. Apologies to the interviewee earlier today. And your penguins. But no, the Pukenui is so much cooler. It's like a cute little guy. It looks like a tomato, but like a bird.
Tomato with wings, they called it, didn't
they? Yeah, tomato with wings. Like, what's cooler than that?
Yeah.
No other birds.
Okay, well, how can people vote?
You can go to birdoftheyear.co.nz or .org.nz. If you search out Bird of the Year, it'll be there. Donate if you can, if you have the money. I don't, because I'm a poor student. But if you do have the money, please donate. It'll help a lot for those rangers and the birds that they keep safe.
Yeah.
It should be very cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jordan.
Thank you for having me.
This was this week's Local Produce with Jordan Irvine from Critic Te Aruhi. It was a short film documentary called Underbirds, and you can watch that on YouTube, and you can vote for this year's Bird of the Year at
birdoftheyear.co.nz.
Bird of the Year.
Just search up Bird of the Year. It'll be there.
Yeah. Awesome. Next up is Females, Calvin Hurts.
Everybody in the club, pull away them gang signs, 'cause we're about to rock and roll.
This has been the RY News at 1 o'clock. Right now, it is 1:58. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to RY News at 1, here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The RY News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts, or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow RY News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.